Suddenly, we aren't in an alley anymore, but a big fancy office. Laura lowers her fist, glancing around, her face scrunched in confusion. I push her off me, and she falls backward, whipping her head back and forth like she can't see me. I move a little closer and realize it's true. Laura is looking right through me. What on earth are you doing on the floor? Director Van Helsing stands in the doorway. His gray suit is wrinkled, and he's got bags under his eyes, like he hasn't slept in days.
It's bad enough you embarrassed this family at the tryout, and now I find you on the floor like a toddler?
Laura gets to her feet quickly, but I can see his words hit home. Her cheeks redden, and her normally cocky voice comes out shaky and uncertain.
I'm sorry. I just got confused.
Director Van Helsing shakes his head and shuts the door behind him. Then he goes to his desk.
The phone call should be coming any minute now.
What phone call? I wonder. Ballara just nods and takes a seat in front of the desk. She rocks back and forth in her chair.
What's going on?
The phone chimes, and Director Van Helsing answers on the first ring. Laura sits up straight in her chair, her eyes searching her father's face. Director Van Helsing just keeps nodding and saying,
"I understand,"
over and over. When he finally does hang up, there's a stunned look on his face.
"Well?" asks Laura, jumping to her feet. "What did they say?"
Director Van Helsing covers his face with both hands.
"She's gone, sweetheart. Your sister has passed on."
Laura lets out a terrible wail. Then she falls to her knees, sobbing.
"Oh no, I've got to make this stop. Dispel," I say, trembling.
The illusion vanishes, and Kirsten flees. I run over and throw my arms around Lara's back.
"I'm so, so sorry."
Laura just keeps crying. Elsie looks on from where she's standing, one hand covering her mouth.
"What did I just do?"
Lara's worst fear is the same as mine, that my brother is more than just missing, that he really is gone. Laura pulls herself free of my grip.
"Stay away from me!"
She sprints out of the alley. Elsie and I meet each other's eyes, but neither of us knows what to say. 28. On the morning of the finale, my emotions are all over the place. I'm excited to be so close to becoming a junior agent and everything that would mean, and probably just as nervous about whether it will actually happen. I try not to dwell on it too much as Elsie and I get ready, but that only leaves me to think about last night and that awful spell I used. Just the memory turns my stomach. When we got back here, Elsie asked me not to use my magic like that on anyone else, but it wasn't necessary. I had already made up my mind to never use foul magic again. Ever, no matter what. There's no big ceremony or encouraging speeches to kick off the finale for the junior agent trainees. The six of us report to the lobby at 9 a.m., and we're given a schedule that tells us where we need to be and at what time in order to complete each section of the finale. We're all fidgety and anxious and look over our schedules quietly. First up for me, a supernatural world knowledge. I walk into this little room with just a number 2 pencil, the test, and an answer sheet. I thought for sure we'd take the exam on a computer like we do when we practice, but they insist that this is tradition. My hard work completing that book list definitely pays off. I know a lot of the answers. When I get to the last question, I smile. It's the same final question I had on my first exam. Which two great beasts reside in the Atlantic Ocean? Easy peasy. The Kraken and the Leviathan. After the test, me and Dylan practice our steps for the Helsing technique for about 30 minutes and then report to the dueling gym. First up are Zoe and Madison. It feels so good to zap them into giggles on the floor mat. The next duel is harder, and I get zapped, but Dylan wins it for us. I should be excited that things are going so well, but still no one's told me how they're going to grade me for the supernatural ability demonstration. They only made it clear that I'm not allowed to do one, with a big red X on that section of my schedule. It makes me think that maybe Dylan is right, and Director Van Helsing plans to disqualify me. Guess it's a good thing I plan on performing a demonstration anyway.
Would Dylan Van Helsing please come to the stage?
Director Van Helsing speaks into a microphone. Even though it's the final demonstration, the briefing auditorium buzzes at the sound of Dylan's name. It's filled with agents and junior agents, with Director Van Helsing and the rest of the grading committee getting the last row to themselves. A few seconds later, Dylan appears from behind the curtain. He's brought a microphone and a chair with him that he places at the center of the stage. Director Van Helsing says,
"You may either display your supernatural ability first and announce what it is to the spectators later, or vice versa. It's your choice."
Dylan moves to the microphone. "I'll be allowing my partner, Amari Peters, to have the stage. She has a demonstration she'd like to perform." Shouts go up in the crowd as I walk out on stage to join him. People leap to their feet.
"I'm very sorry, but that won't be allowed," announces Director Van Helsing. "Come down off that stage at once, young lady."
My partner and I exchange a grin, and then he darts behind the curtain, leaving me the stage. Director Van Helsing is practically growling into his microphone.
"I'll give you one more chance before I send someone up there. You will not perform that vile sorcery here among these good people."
But I don't move. And when I raise my hands, it goes silent. People cower in their seats, like they think I'm about to attack or something.
"Get her off that stage!" barks Director Van Helsing.
Two agents run on stage and try to scoop me up into their arms. But I'm not on stage. It was just an illusion. With a wave of my hand, I fill the room with darkness. Whispers break out across the room, and I take a slow, deep breath as I tiptoe up to the stage. My whole body tingles with nerves, and it feels like my tummy has balled itself into a knot. But if this is what I have to do to prove myself, then I will. "Hello," I say into my own microphone. "My name is Amari Peters, the magician girl. You guys have heard all about magicians, but most of you don't actually know any. So I'd like to welcome you all to a very special supernatural immersion class, Magician Edition." There are rumblings in the crowd, but thankfully, no one leaves. "Habitat," I continue, and I paint an illusion, letting the image pour out of my fingertips. Suddenly, the auditorium looks like a street in my neighborhood. A few people gasp. Some keep turning their heads back and forth, while others reach out with their hands to see if they can touch anything. I've lived in the Rosewood Projects for as long as I can remember. It's basically a low-income apartment complex for people who need a little help getting by. People joke and call it the hood or the bad side of town, but it's full of good people if you give them a chance. I change the illusion to my apartment and have the audience glide through like one of those virtual house tours on the internet. This is home for me. It's probably not much compared to where a lot of you guys live, but it's all I've ever known. This is my room, junky as always. And this is where the famous,
Agent Quentin Peters used to sleep when he was just my big brother. We would lie in here and dream about the things we were going to do. He made me believe I could actually do anything I set my mind to. He made me believe in me. Hobbies? Well, usually I compete in the summer swim meets at the rec center, but I got a little busy this year trying to make junior agent. My joke gets a few laughs, and it's enough to encourage me to keep going. "Go to the Department of Undersea Relations," someone shouts. "Oh, good point," I say. Guess it's hard to complain about missing the pool when there's a whole floor that's underwater. That gets even more laughs. I also like to read books. The fun ones. Not Supernatural Laws and Regulations. That author should definitely be investigated for crimes against good moods and staying awake. I'd much rather read books about magic and adventure, though I never imagined my own life would ever come close. Recently, I've taken up another hobby, and that's practicing magic, which is mostly just me playing around with illusions. I flash an image of Elsie freaking out that time I turned her hair pink. I think I've gotten pretty good. Tell me what you guys think. And then I put on a show. I turn the ceiling into a cloudless, starry night sky and let the aurora borealis glimmer just beyond their fingertips as shooting stars zip across the auditorium. I turn the room dark again, and suddenly, fireworks explode and sparkle overhead one after the other. Then the auditorium becomes a circus, with performers doing flips down the aisles and trapeze acrobats twisting and flipping above them. Clowns spill out of a car on stage while tigers jump through hoops of fire. I put us aboard a pirate ship in the middle of a terrible storm. People clutch their seats as the ship rocks back and forth amid crashing waves that tower above us. Finally, I put us on a calm, sandy beach with the sun setting into the horizon. The end. I sweep away my illusion and step out onto the stage in front of the microphone Dylan left for me. Odd faces stare up at me. Supernatural immersion class usually ends with us asking questions. So here I am. I'll answer anything you guys ask. "Is it really you this time?" someone asks. "Yep, it's really me," I say. Hopefully Director Van Helsing will let me finish. Agent Fiona's voice answers. "Go on." There are so many questions, from, "Does using magic make you grow horns?" to, "Did Quentin know you're a magician?" to, "What makes you different from all the magicians that committed so many awful crimes?" That last question is the hardest, and I have to think before I answer. I don't know that anything makes me different from those other magicians. Honestly, there's a lot to being a magician that I still don't get. But what I have learned is that it's my choice what kind of magician I'm going to be. I'm trying to learn from my mistakes and not be like those bad magicians you guys know about. I guess I'm just asking for a chance to prove myself. And when Agent Fiona finally calls time on my presentation, people actually clap. Not everyone, but some. And it means everything. I head backstage to find two agents waiting. I figured I'd get in trouble for this no matter how good or bad it turned out. Just a few more seconds. And I close my eyes, still listening to that applause. Screams from the auditorium pop my eyes back open. Suddenly, alarms go off and agents rush past me. I step back on stage to find the whole place going nuts. People dash up the aisles toward the exit. Others climb over their seats, but most everyone is looking up. I lift my head to find three huge bat hybrids flashing long fangs. I'm too stunned to even react, my feet rooted to the stage. But then I blink, and suddenly, there are 20. 29.
Piercing screeches hurt my ears as the giant bats descend from the rafters, fangs bared. Dozens of agents scale the walls to meet them head-on.
Amari!
Agent Magnus's voice snaps me out of my daze. He stands at the edge of the stage, waving me toward him. I run over, and he throws an arm around my shoulder. He leads me off the stage and up the aisle toward the exit, where Director Van Helsing and a few agents are helping people out of the auditorium. We're almost there when there's an enormous crash and something massive bursts through the wall. A hulking gray hybrid, standing upright on two legs, turns to face us. Its long snout has a pointed horn at the end, a rhino hybrid. Magnus puts himself between it and me.
When I say go, you hightail it out of here and don't look back, got it?
Got it, I say. The rhino hybrid growls, its massive muscles bulging. Then it lowers its snout and charges.
Go!
Shouts Magnus. He gives me a shove, sending me stumbling into the seats. I whip my head around in time to see Magnus and the beast tumble down the aisle. Magnus is one of the best there is. He'll be fine. I make myself believe it. I have to get to Director Van Helsing so I can make it out of here in one piece. But a glance through the giant hole that the rhino made in the wall stops me cold. It's total chaos. Dozens of hybrids, bears, panthers, gorillas run roughshod over the place. I mean, the agents are amazing, taking down monsters more than twice their size. But every time one falls, another appears out of thin air to take its place. They can barely keep up. It also doesn't help that so many agents have to stay back to protect the spectators Director Van Helsing is sending out of the auditorium. I grip the stun stick at my waist. Shouldn't I try to help? What would Quentin do? I step out into the chaos, eyes darting in every direction. Agents and monsters move in blurs around me. Deafening roars and bone-rattling growls come at me from all directions. My fingers tremble around my stun stick. I'm in way over my head. I scream as something snatches me back into the auditorium, but it's only Agent Magnus, sporting a nasty bruise on his forehead. He's furious.
What's the matter with you?
He shouts.
I just wanted to help,
I stutter.
This ain't a fight for a kid, Agent Magnus snaps. Get over to Van Helsing and make for the lobby. Go!
This time, I listen. Agent Magnus follows behind me, just long enough to make sure I don't get any more dumb ideas. Then he balls his fists, and I watch his skin harden into metal. He flicks his wrist, and his stun stick becomes a giant axe. Flames erupt along the blades, and he leaps through the hole in the wall, back into the battle. I reach Director Van Helsing just as he sends off the last group. The director's eyes dart back and forth between the battle, with the bat hybrids overhead, and the fight going on in the hallway. He frowns when he notices me, but it doesn't last long.
Hurry and catch up with the others.
I duck through the doorway. The agents have stopped this last group from making a run for the elevators because a group of scary-looking gorilla hybrids are close to breaking through the line of agents protecting the escape route. I recognize Elsie's brown curls and white researcher coat in the group and take the spot next to her. Her eyes are wide and panicked. She nearly jumps out of her skin when I throw my arms around her.
Oh, thank goodness, she says. I tried to wait for you, but Director Van Helsing made me leave.
Thanks, I say. Elsie shrieks as a gorilla hybrid gets frighteningly near, but it's beaten back by a female agent with a laser whip.
That was too close.
Elsie clutches my jacket.
Are we going to be okay?
Definitely, I say. As soon as the word leaves my mouth, a sea of beige appears over Elsie's shoulder, and a wave of wilderness rangers from Creature Control charge out of the lobby, each with a flaming bird perched on their arm.
Phoenixes,
Elsie exclaims.
In one synchronized motion, wilderness rangers point out targets, and the birds take off, colliding against hybrids and exploding on impact. As soon as the fiery ashes hit the floor, the birds reform and strike again. The agents use the attacks to get the advantage in the battle, pushing the hybrids farther up the hall.
"Kids, get to the lobby!"
yells an agent. None of us need to be told a second time. A wave of relief surges through me as we start down the hall to the bottom of the U, away from the danger. I turn to get one last look at the fighting and freeze. A masked figure in black sprints across the ceiling, straight toward the hybrids. Only none of the beasts attack. If anything, they're clearing a path. I gasp. Moreau's apprentice. It has to be. The figure is down the hall in seconds, headed into the hallway leading to the great vault. No one else seems to notice, except Dylan, who turns and gives chase. No, what's he thinking? But I already know the answer. This is his chance to not only stop this, but to prove Maria isn't a traitor.
"Amari!" shouts Elsie. "What are you waiting for?"
A terrible knot settles in my gut. "We aren't just being attacked. I think we're being robbed." Elsie's eyes go wide as she glances down the hall in the direction of the great vault.
"You two, by the door!"
shouts a junior agent near the entrance to the lobby. "Either come on or we're leaving you behind." It's now or never. I turn to Elsie. "Go on without me. Whatever you're thinking, don't do it," she replies. "You'll get yourself hurt." That's what I'm afraid will happen to Dylan. I won't let him do this alone. One of the agents shouts, "Hold the position! The hybrids are retreating!" But they aren't retreating. Not really. They've backed up to form a wall in front of the great vault. That can't be a coincidence. I still have on my sky sprints. "I know what I'm doing," I say, and dash up the nearest wall. I keep close to the ceiling, away from the fighting below. Someone calls my name, but I can't turn around. I have to get to the vault before it's too late. The old wooden door protecting the great vault is wide open. A shiver creeps down my back. That door is supposed to be impenetrable. I drop to the floor and run inside. The vault is a wide, dark space with little spotlights shining down on long rows of pedestals. It reminds me of the pedestals in our first tryout. I look around for Dylan or the intruder, but I don't see anyone.
"Amari!"
Dylan steps into the spotlight of a pedestal. "There's someone else in here. I saw. How did they get past the door?" Dylan shakes his head. "It was open when I got here." We step farther into the vault, looking for some sign of the intruder.
"Looking for me?"
A voice whispers into my ear. I spin around to find a girl dressed in all black, backing away from me. She fades into the shadows.
"Dylan, over here!"
He's at my side in an instant.
"What happened?"
"I saw the thief," I say with a shiver. "She was right behind me." Dylan points his stun stick out in front of him.
"We know you're in here. You might as well come out."
The thief snaps her fingers, and all the spotlights shut off at once.
"She's a technologist," says Dylan. "That must be how she got in."
"Are you two trainees going to arrest me?"
she teases. Dylan gasps.
"What?"
I ask. "What is it?"
Amari,
he stutters.
"I know that voice."
Shouts pull my eyes to the door. Blinding overhead lights click on.
"There!"
Agent Fiona calls, and a crowd of agents rushes in our direction.
"Dylan! Peters!"
says Director Van Helsing.
"What on earth are you doing in here?"
"There was a girl in black," I say quickly. Dylan looks sick.
"Dad, it's
above us," someone shouts. The girl in black races along the ceiling and the agents fire blast after blast, but none of them even comes close. Once she reaches the hallway, she drops to the floor and pulls off her mask. Gasps ring out from the agents around me. Maria Van Helsing smirks and gives us a bow. Then she taps at her transporter armband and vanishes. Quentin was betrayed by his own partner. Knowing it's true makes my chest ache. Worse, that terrible thought is followed quickly by another. Director, where's the black book kept? But Director Van Helsing doesn't seem to hear me. He's frozen in place, staring at the spot his daughter just teleported from. A few of the other agents dash farther into the vault. Still dazed, I follow. Agent Fiona stops suddenly, throwing a hand over her mouth. A pedestal sits empty. 30. Good afternoon, Chief Crow speaking. Earlier today, the Department of Supernatural Investigations suffered an unprecedented attack by hybrids, somehow capable of teleporting directly into our facility. It is still unclear exactly how our various security systems were breached, but I can assure you that we are in the process of a most thorough investigation. For now, all training activities are suspended until further notice. All trainees and junior personnel are to remain in their dormitories unless given express permission to do otherwise. Dinner will be delivered directly to your rooms.
Will you please tell me what's wrong?
Elsie asks again, once the announcement is over. You've been pacing nonstop since you got here. I don't answer her. I can't. I wish so badly that I could have knocked that stupid smirk from Maria's stupid face.
Hey,
says Elsie, jumping into my path. You're scaring me, okay? I've never seen your aura go this red before. Tell me what's wrong. So I do. I tell her what I've hoped wasn't true for weeks. My brother was stabbed in the back by the person he trusted most.
Are you sure?
Elsie's voice goes soft. But that would mean she's a magician too. That can't be right, can it? She is a magician, I say. And Moreau must have given her the same choice he gave me. Bureau or magician? And she dragged my brother down with her. A loud knock makes us jump. Elsie hops up and opens the door. It's Bertha. Your presence has been requested by Special Agent Magnus, ASAP. I'm up and out the door in seconds. Lucy, the elevator, asks me a million questions I don't have answers for, but she goes quiet once we arrive at the lobby of the Department of Supernatural Investigations. An agent steps into the elevator. State your business, he says in a stern voice. I'm supposed to see Agent Magnus. The agent taps his earpiece. I've got Peters here to see Agent Magnus. Confirm. I start to worry that maybe no one will answer, but then the agent nods and asks, Do you know the way? I do, I say. Go straight to his office and then come right back to this lobby. Understand? Yes, sir, I say. He steps aside, and I head through the lobby and into the main hallway. The whole area is a mess. Papers are everywhere, and big chunks of the walls are either dented or missing entirely. It looks like a bomb went off. There isn't a person in sight. I've never heard it so quiet in here. A heavy, sad feeling settles over me as I walk around the U and turn into the hallway where all the offices are. This place belonged to my brother, and I've worked this summer to make it belong to me too. Director Van Helsing is in the hallway, surrounded by other agents. He's changed into a different suit, but his face still looks haunted. He does a double take when he sees me. Peters, what on earth are you doing up here? I was called by Agent Magnus, I reply. The director frowns. Whatever business you have with him, make it quick. We'll be locking down the entire bureau within the hour. I move a little faster as I squeeze past the mall. When I knock on Agent Magnus's door, he rushes me inside and shuts the door. The office looks like a hybrid got loose in here too. File folders are scattered across his desk, the floor covered in loose papers. Maria, I say. It was her all along. Magnus's face flushes.
I won't lie and tell you it don't break my heart. But there'll be plenty of time later for the cursing and the shouting. Right now we need to focus on our next move.
He places a briefcase on his desk. It looks just like the one Quentin sent me weeks ago. Is that?
It is.
Agent Magnus waves me over to his desk. With a few taps on his keyboard, my Bureau of Supernatural Affairs webpage pops up on screen.
Good, he says. All four of us judges submitted our marks before the hybrid attack.
Amari Renee Peters, junior agent trainee. First tryout, pass. Second tryout, pass. Finale, supernatural knowledge score, 91%, pass. Finale, stun stick duels, 2 wins, 0 losses, pass. Finale, supernatural demonstration, 3/4 passing marks obtained, pass. Magnus, excellent. Fiona, excellent. Cozy, satisfactory. Van Helsing, fail. Trainee Peters has met all requirements for promotion.
Don't worry about that fail, says Agent Magnus. You only need 3 out of 4 to pass this year. Fiona put in that rule change early. She thought the director might not give you a fair shake.
I really did it then? I'm so relieved.
You done good, kid.
Magnus types his name beside promoting agent and taps enter. Then he puts a finger to my Moonstone badge and says,
by the power vested in me as a training agent, I promote you, Amari Peters, to junior agent.
My Moonstone badge warps from a circle into an oval. Department of Supernatural Investigations engraved above the image of an evenly weighted balance. Bureau of Supernatural Affairs is etched across the bottom. Despite everything, I can't help but smile at the sight. After all the hard work and the bullies and the doubters, especially myself, I actually made junior agent. Agent Magnus points to the briefcase.
Quentin's things are yours now. Go on and grab the handle.
The moment my fingers make contact, the locks click open. I lift the lid to find several folders inside. Magnus and I take them out and set them down on his desk. It's not till we reach the bottom of the briefcase that we find a manila folder so thin it looks empty. It's marked key holder. I pull it out and open it up. There's a single sheet of paper inside.
Dadgummit,
says Magnus in an awed voice.
Quentin actually did it. He tracked down the key holder.
Key holder. Name, Dr. Henry Underhill, MD, shapeshifter. Location, Boonies Medical Clinic.
I'm putting in a formal request to be allowed to retrieve the black key and bring it under our protection, says Magnus.
A request? Maria already has the black book. She could be on her way to the black key right now.
The honest truth is, she could have the black key already, says Magnus. And if that's true, the supernatural world is in a lot of trouble. We can only hope that's not the case.
I'm tired of hoping. I've been doing that since I got here. Quentin went missing trying to stop this.
Our hands are tied, says Magnus. As caretakers of the Black Book,
the Bureau was founded on the oath that it would never pursue the Black Key. The Black Book and the Black Key are never to be brought together for any reason.
But they won't be, I say. The Bureau doesn't have the Black Book anymore.
And we'll be sure to make that point clear when we ask for permission. Rules are rules, Amari. If an emergency session is called, we could probably have an answer in about 24 hours.
That's a whole day, I say.
It's time we can spend gathering as much info as we can, says Agent Magnus. Maybe we'll try Moreau again, see if we can get a sense of what Maria's planning to do next. It's a long shot, but he'll probably be in the mood to gloat.
I start to protest, but Agent Magnus has already pulled out his phone.
I need to be connected with the chief immediately.
Now entering Blackstone Prison. I'm back on Lord Kingsington, the elevator. Only this time, it's with Agent Magnus. While the Bureau waits to hear back from the Supernatural World Congress for special permission to go after the keyholder, Chief Crow agreed with Magnus about questioning Moreau again. Maybe he won't tell us anything helpful, but I guess it's worth a try. Better than sitting around doing nothing.
Heavens, says Lord Kensington. How did those nasty hybrids even get in? Somebody shot off our shields.
Magnus crosses his arms.
But only a few people have access to those codes, and I trust any of them with my life.
Did Maria have the shield codes? I ask.
Yeah, every special agent does in case of emergency, says Magnus. But her codes would have been deactivated the moment she and Quentin were declared missing in action. The main computer would have done that automatically.
That's when I realized something. Back in the vault, Dylan said the thief was a technologist. Maria's a magician, like me, so she wouldn't need codes to shut down our defenses. For a moment, Agent Magnus just stares, incredulous. He shakes it off.
You're telling me magicians have the power to control computers with their magic?
I bite my lip. It's called tech magic.
And how do you know this?
When I don't answer, Magnus's expression darkens.
This ain't a time for secrets, kid. How do you know this?
It's just something I've learned, I say. Magnus groans and turns away from me.
Then we're still vulnerable, even now. We've got to get you kids home and away from danger.
You can't send me home, I say. Not until I've found Quentin. You said you let me help with the search.
That was before the Bureau got turned into a war zone. I owe it to your brother to keep you safe, Amari.
But
no buts, he says. After we speak to Moreau, I'm gonna personally see to it you and your mother are placed in a safe location until this is all sorted out.
I'm so annoyed I could shout. It's so unfair. I don't need protecting. Lord Kensington races us down the spiraling rail to the level Moreau has all to himself. Just as he was the last time, he's sitting in a chair, facing away from us. Agent Magnus steps out of the elevator first, and I follow. The moment my foot hits the smooth black floor of the prison, the inside of Moreau's glass cell transforms into a scene of a fancy party full of people celebrating. Moreau appears next to the glass.
Is that Agent Magnus?
Asks Moreau.
My, it has been a while, hasn't it?
Agent Magnus's face turns serious.
I take it you know why I'm here.
Moreau's thin lips curve into a small grin.
I've heard talk from the guards about your precious Bureau being attacked. And by hybrids, no less. Such pests. I do hope you called the exterminator.
Enough with the games. We know Maria's trying to resurrect Vladimir for you.
Agent Magnus pounds the glass.
Tell us how to find her. You know nothing, snaps Moreau.
I do, however, confess myself disappointed. I warned you when you captured me that another would take on the mantle and return us to our former glory. You laughed then at the idea that other magicians existed outside the Bureau's knowledge. And today, you show up with your brand new magician in tow. It seems it's my turn to laugh now.
Agent Magnus turns and starts toward Lord Kensington.
This is a waste of time.
Moreau is eyeing me now.
You had your chance to choose the winning side. Perhaps we can teach you to be less trusting. But then, maybe all Peters are gullible.
Just shut up, okay? I told you, I'm on my brother's side. I turn to follow Agent Magnus, frowning at Moreau over my shoulder. But Moreau just shrugs.
Ah, well, I do appreciate your stopping by, even if it amounted to little more than giggles and grins.
My whole body goes stiff.
Giggles and grins.
I hear Madame Violet's voice in my head.
An illusionist should never trust that which giggles and grins.
I swallow. The words suddenly make sense. What's the most obvious reason for an illusionist not to trust? Because we know that eyes can be tricked. It's the very first lesson in her spellbook.
Never trust. Take absolutely nothing at face value. In viewing anything, assume its appearance is false until otherwise proven.
The rest of what she said comes back to me.
When I was living, I would cast my magic far into the future and marvel at the scenes my illusions would show me. I saw who you were speaking to, Amari, and the spell you cast.
But she couldn't have meant right now. Could she? That's when I remember what Moreau told me, the very first time we met.
There will only be one lie between us.
Right after he introduced himself. Slowly, I raise my hand toward Moreau, lifting two fingers.
Dispel.
The party scene vanishes. All that's left is Moreau and his rocking chair. He tries to stand, his body shaking violently. Still, he moves closer, limping on his left side. Agent Magnus steps up next to me.
What did you do to him?
But I don't answer, because I can already see the wrinkles and gray hairs begin to fade away. A shorter, paler, much younger man sneers at us. This can't be happening.
Good,
the man grins darkly.
Very good. For now you truly understand the danger you are in. My master, a magician whose magic dwarfs your 100%, now possesses the Black Book.
Who are you?
Agent Magnus demands.
I am but a lowly servant who has played his part in the grand scheme.
The man says,
join us, girl. You won't want to find out what we do to those who betray their fellow magicians.
It takes a second for me to process what it all means. Moreau was never captured. He's the one behind all this. The most dangerous being in the supernatural world has the Black Book. Agent Magnus grabs me by both shoulders and crouches.
How did you know?
Voice shaky, I tell him about my trip to Madame Violet.
This changes everything,
says Agent Magnus, his eyes wide and panicked.
If we don't get our hands on that key, the world might not last another 24 hours.
We dash to Lord Kensington. Agent Magnus shouts,
take us directly to the chief.
31. This isn't the chief's office. That's my first thought,
when Lord Kensington opens its doors. Instead, we've been brought to the Department of Supernatural Investigations. "I'm sorry," says Lord Kensington. "I've been ordered to bring you here." Director Van Helsing stands in the lobby, arms crossed. Behind him is a whole squadron of agents.
"We ain't got time for whatever this is," says Agent Magnus. "Didn't you get the alert? Moreau is free. The person who has the black book isn't simply some apprentice magician. It's one of the Knight Brothers."
"I received the alert," says Director Van Helsing. "Peters, come stand next to me."
"But do as he says."
Agent Magnus interrupts. "I don't feel good about it, but I do as I'm told." Director Van Helsing's face hardens at the sight of my junior agent badge.
"If I haven't made this clear enough, there will be no magicians in my department as long as I am director."
He puts a finger to my badge and says, "Demoted." And just like that, my Moonstone badge shrinks back into a trainee badge. I ball my fists at my sides. Dylan was right. His father never meant to give me a real chance. Director Van Helsing's eyes return to Agent Magnus, back in the elevator. "How curious that your first move would be to head to the prison to make this remarkable discovery. Convenient, wouldn't you say? Look at Magnus, the hero, instead of Magnus, the accomplice. Despite our differences, not in a million years would I have pegged you for a traitor." Magnus shakes his head.
"Not even you're dim enough to believe that, Van Helsing. Just what are you getting at?"
Director Van Helsing makes a motion with his arm, and the agents move forward, surrounding the elevator. Van Helsing waits until they're in position before he answers Agent Magnus.
"We've discovered how the hybrids were able to teleport into the Bureau. You deactivated our shields."
"He didn't," I say. "It was—"
"Quiet," says Magnus.
"Yes, Peters. Save your breath," says Director Van Helsing.
"This man doesn't deserve your loyalty. No one has access to your codes but you, Magnus."
Director Van Helsing steps forward, his jaw clenched tight.
"How far back does your treachery reach, I wonder? Maria looked up to you. Did you convince her to betray both her family and the Bureau?"
"I'm being set up," Magnus pleads. "Why would I be dumb enough to use a code that can easily be traced back to me? Why wouldn't I run off instead of sticking around here?"
"Both are questions I'm asking myself," Director Van Helsing replies. "I've simply followed the evidence, just as we're taught. It leads to you, Magnus."
Agent Magnus huffs.
"And I suppose you want me to make this easy on you and just turn myself in."
"Young Miss Peters is present," Director Van Helsing replies.
"I hope, for her sake, you'll keep this a civil affair."
Agent Magnus's intense eyes find mine, and I can see he's trying to tell me something. He raises his hands.
"I'm surrendering."
My mind is spinning as I'm led by two agents back to the youth dormitories. Neither says a word till we get to my room. That's when the taller one says,
"The Bureau is on lockdown tonight. The director wants you available for questioning first thing tomorrow."
They don't wait for me to answer. Both turn and head back down the hall. As soon as I step through the door, Elsie rushes over and pokes her head into the hallway, looking back and forth before closing the door behind me.
"You've got a visitor."
That's when Dylan crawls out from under my bed. It's the first time we've seen each other since we followed Maria into the Great Vault.
"What are you doing in here?"
I ask. Dylan pulls himself up to a knee.
"I heard about them tracing the codes back to Agent Magnus. There's no way he would betray the Bureau like that. It had to be Maria."
His voice falters, and he shakes his head.
She must have framed him or something. I should have listened to you about her.
Elsie throws a somber glance at the magazine covers framed above her bed. This goes against everything she's ever believed about Maria. But she didn't see Maria's smirking face. Dylan's sister enjoyed every second of betraying her father and the rest of the bureau.
I know you may not trust me since I'm her brother, says Dylan. But I feel like it's my responsibility to do something about it.
It's worse than Maria stealing the black book, I say. If you've been here, then you probably haven't heard that Moreau was free. I think one of his other apprentices was using an illusion to take his place.
Elsie's hand goes to her mouth. He's free?
Dylan's eyes go wide, and he stumbles over his words before he's finally able to say,
For how long? Was he ever even captured?
I don't know, I say. But I don't think Magnus would want me focused on clearing his name. I think he'd rather I do what he can anymore. What my brother started before him.
You can't mean what I think you mean,
says Elsie. I'm going to go after the Black Key, I say. That has to be what Agent Magnus was trying to tell me with that look. And why he stopped me from telling Director Van Helsing about how Maria's tech magic is capable of shutting down the Bureau's shields. He doesn't want me stuck here answering questions. He wants me out there getting that key.
Wait, says Dylan.
You know where it is?
Magnus was right about my brother hiding the location in a farewell briefcase, I say.
We just have to get there before Moreau does. And convince the key holder to give us the black key.
I don't know about this.
Elsie falls heavily onto her bed.
You'd be breaking the Bureau's biggest oath. They could disband the entire Bureau for this.
Amari, they'd throw you into black stone.
I swallow.
My brother went missing trying to prevent this. I have to try.
If you're really going to do this, says Dylan.
Then I've got your back. I won't let Maria hurt anyone else.
Elsie sighs.
Then, I guess I'm coming too.
No offense, says Dylan, but I don't think that's a good idea. Amari and I at least have junior agent training to defend ourselves.
I've got all the gadgets I've been working on. Elsie reaches under her bed and grabs a book bag full of contraptions and then looks to me.
Every time you get into trouble, I just sit back or I hide. I'm sick of being that person. Please let me help.
It's my idea, so it's my call, I say.
Elsie comes.
Fine, says Dylan, but if something happens to her, that's on you.
Deal, I say.
Now we just need a plan.
Leave it to me, says Dylan. Just be ready to go.
At 8 o'clock, an announcement comes over the intercom.
Attention junior personnel and trainees. This is Chief Director Crow speaking. In light of this morning's attack, and after meeting with the directors of each department, I have decided to suspend this year's summer camp. Until we can verify that none of our other security protections have been compromised, we cannot in good conscience allow children to remain inside the facility. We are in the process of notifying your parents. For those from non-legacy families, the cover story will be that our organization ran into a funding mishap that caused us to end summer camp prematurely. My phone buzzes at the same time that Bertha stomps into the room. A quick glance shows it's Mama. She must have gotten the news about camp being canceled. I slip my phone into my pocket. Bertha holds up a slip of paper that she reads from. This is a level 5 notification. Amari Peters and Elsie Rodriguez are to report to the transporter room and the Department of Supernatural Licenses and Records right away. Her face scrunches, but she continues reading.
They are to bring the necessary equipment, and they will already know what equipment that is. Signed, Director Van Helsing, Department of Supernatural Investigations. Bertha looks up at me. Get to it, then. Director Van Helsing made his wishes pretty clear, I'd think.
Oh, yes, very clear, I say. How in the world did Dylan pull this off?
I grab my stun stick and sky sprints, and Elsie straps on her backpack. Bertha hands me the note as we step out of my room. You'll need this to get by the security checkpoints. I walk to the elevators in total disbelief. Mischief is waiting for us. ID card or hall pass, please. Elsie puts a hand on her hip. Since when did you start acting like a proper elevator? Mischief sighs. My dirty rascal chip gets deactivated during lockdowns. ID card or hall pass, please. I hold up the slip Bertha gave us, and Mischief scans it. Permission to travel to the Department of Supernatural licenses and records granted. The large lobby of the Department of Supernatural Licenses and Records is completely empty, and only one lady is seated at a booth. We walk over, and she clears her throat loudly. Please grab a ticket. But we're the only ones here, I say. Rules are rules, she says. The lady makes us walk all the way across the lobby to grab a ticket, then waits for us to sit down before tapping the button that causes the speaker to chime. Now serving A1 at the first window. We show her the pass, and she lets us into the main hall. An agent is stationed there, and I show him the pass too. He reads it, scratches his head in confusion, and then calls another agent farther down the hall to have a look. Finally, the agents let us through, but they watch us closely until we turn the corner into the transporter room. Dylan pops out from behind one of the glass tubes. You made it! Wasn't entirely sure that was going to work. Me neither, I say. But you do know we can't teleport out of here during a lockdown. The security computer will shut us down. True, says Dylan, but only if you're trying to teleport someplace outside the Bureau. You want to teleport us someplace inside the Bureau? Asks Elsie. Yep, says Dylan. Just trust me on this one. I've already plugged in the destination. Dylan leads us over to the teleporter he's got powered on. I step into the glass tube, and Dylan follows. Shouts come from behind us. It's the agents we handed the note to. They must have triple-checked. Stop! One of them shouts, sliding to a stop in front of us. Poor Elsie is between the agents and the teleporter. Step aside, girl, and you too exit the transporter. Now! Elsie takes a deep, trembling breath and looks back at us over her shoulder. Go! Dylan mashes a giant red button, and the transporter begins to hum. At the sound, the agents rush toward us, and I expect Elsie to run, but she stands her ground. And then my best friend breathes fire. Dylan and I reappear inside a wide concrete room. Along the walls are large stalls with all sorts of crazy vehicles parked inside them. Everything from floating bicycles to flying saucers. Dylan starts forward, but turns to look at me over his shoulder. Did Elsie just... I grin. I think she really did. It isn't until we're halfway across the large space that I see where Dylan is taking us. The Jolly Roger. The ship that belonged to my brother and his sister. And just where do you think you're headed? Agent Fiona steps out from a stall labeled Winged Chariot. We stop cold, and three thoughts jump into my head. One, we're so caught. Two, Agent Fiona is definitely cool enough to pull off a winged chariot. And three, we are so caught. Dylan and I each give completely different explanations at the same time. Agent Fiona just crosses her arms and looks me right in the eye. My whole body goes stiff.
Agent Fiona blinks in surprise. Magnus put Yi up to this. Or do Yi just think he wants you tracking down that key?
He said that we've got to get our hands on that key, I say, remembering Agent Magnus's words.
Agent Fiona claps her hand against her forehead.
I don't understand what the man could be thinking. You're just trainees, for heaven's sake.
He wanted to do it himself, but he got framed, I say. It's a long story. Agent Fiona grumbles.
Told that bumbling idiot director, there's no one more loyal than Beauregard and the whole bloody bureau.
She holds up her left wrist, where a device has been cuffed. Van Helsing's even tracking my movements in case I'm guilty of helping. Can't step one foot outside the bureau without setting off an alarm that'd have 50 agents come after me. Like I don't have a kitty of my own at home to check in on. The audacity of that man.
I step forward, realizing Director Van Helsing may have done me a favor when he decided to demote me. I'm just a trainee, and not officially part of the Bureau yet, so I can't get the Bureau in trouble for going after the key. I decide to be a little bolder. I think you should trust Agent Magnus's judgment.
Agent Fiona shakes her head.
Heaven help me. This is what we've come to. Take down my cell phone number. The very first sign of trouble, ye text me your coordinates, and I'll be right there, tracking device or not.
I type the number into my phone. Agent Fiona gives us another look, like she can't believe this is happening, and then heads to go open the hangar doors. It's not till we get into the ship that Dylan admits he's only ever flown the Jolly Roger on call to action, Agents Against the World. That boy then has the nerve to say, how much different could real life be from the video game? Turns out, a lot. But after backing into the wall twice, he gets things under control. Thankfully, Agent Fiona can't see our rough start from inside the hangar control room. Dylan guides us slowly out of the stall and into the landing area. The real Jolly Roger is even fancier than the wakeful dream version. I type, Henry Underhill, Booney's Medical Clinic, into the navigation system. Route found. Autopilot? I look to Dylan, and he nods. Then I press my finger to the go button, and the two of us dash into the night sky.
32. Just like in the wakeful dream, the Jolly Roger moves impossibly fast. The world blurs, and I close my eyes against the streaking stars. This will work. We're going to find the key holder and get him to safety. Marie and Moreau won't win. We're here, I think, as the ship glides to a slow stop in midair. The trip took all of 10 seconds. I glance back at Dylan at the captain's wheels and notice his troubled expression. I feel so bad for him. All this time he's been so convinced Maria was innocent, and now they're on opposite sides. I lean over the railing. A vast forest stretches out beneath us. The only sign of civilization is a small log cabin and a long dirt road that curves out of sight. Here, the sun is only just beginning to set, hurling up streaks of purple and orange as the night pushes it away. Dylan comes over to take a look. We should hurry and park this thing, I say. We don't want the key holder to look out his window and see a ship hovering over his house. Landing the Jolly Roger ends up being trickier than I'd imagined. Dylan brings the boat down a little too fast, causing a boom that echoes through the trees. Sorry. I'm just glad we got here in one piece, I say. We hop down off the ship and head over to the doctor's cabin. The grass around here reaches up past my knees. It hasn't been cut in a while. Weird. It makes me wonder if anyone is really using this cabin. We pass a sign that says,
the Boonies Medical Clinic, country doctoring at its finest, Henry Underhill, M.D. This is definitely the place. The front door is only a few steps away, but Dylan grabs my arm and says, "Just hear him out, okay? Give him a chance." "Huh? Give who a chance?" Dylan sighs. "Why don't you come inside and find out?" Without even knocking first, he walks inside. Confused, I move to follow him, but freeze in the doorway. The doctor's office has been completely trashed. Papers and medical supplies scattered all over the floor. Chairs and cabinets overturned. And seated at a fancy golden table, in the middle of it all, is a smiling gray-haired man in blood-red robes. He looks identical to the illusion, except there's a presence to him that I never felt back at Blackstone Prison. Something old and very dark. It raises the hairs on the back of my neck. The real Raoul Moreau leans forward in his chair.
"Nice to finally meet you, Amari Peters.
Please don't let us be too late."
"Where's the key holder?"
"I'm afraid Dr. Underhill was dealt with some time ago," says Moreau.
"Do you really think I would risk attacking the Bureau for the Black Book without already possessing the Black Key?"
He pulls a piece of twisted black metal from inside his robe.
"But how?"
I ask. Moreau's grin widens, flashing his pointed canines.
"Being so young in your magic, you wouldn't know this, but there are ways to make truths spill from lips like water from a fountain."
I grimace. My brother didn't stand a chance.
"Where is Quentin?"
"Right here."
Moreau sweeps his hands forward, and a medical gurney rolls out from behind the counter. My breath hitches at the sight of my brother, lying still, too still. Shimmering green mist hovers in the air around him.
"What are you doing to him?"
"Extracting his life essence. Your brother has been dying a very slow death."
Moreau grins.
"The spell I shall perform tonight requires it. A fitting end, wouldn't you say?"
I draw my stun stick, but Dylan knocks it out of my hand. Moreau laughs, and with a twirl of his fingers, yanks my body forward through the air and drops me into a golden chair at the table. I'm totally defenseless. Dylan takes a seat across from me, right at Moreau's side. I feel like I could throw up.
"You've been lying to me all along!"
I snap at him. Dylan doesn't respond. He doesn't even look at me. Moreau laughs.
"I'm afraid my partner has played you for quite the fool, child. And for a very long time, too. It might shock you to know that it was he who stole the black book from right under your nose. He walked out with it in his jacket pocket while you, Chief Crow, and a dozen other agents stood only feet away."
"But Maria," I say, "I saw her. We all did."
"You saw what Dylan wanted you to see."
Moreau throws his head back and laughs some more.
"She was an illusion, and all the tech magic she supposedly performed was actually Dylan here."
I can't believe it. "You disabled the shields to let the hybrids in? You're the one who set up Magnus?" Maria was a victim, just like Quentin. Dylan still won't look at me. I shake my head.
"But why? All those times you said you wanted Maria back, and you knew where she was all along."
Dylan stares me straight in the eye.
"Maria is a coward, just like all those other weakling Van Helsing magicians before her. For centuries, they've stayed silent,
while the Bureau locked away magician after magician. It's like I told you, we're special, Amari, and we deserve to be treated like it. We shouldn't have to hide what we are. Moreau helped me to understand that a true magician cannot serve two masters. With a wave of Moreau's hands, Maria's rolled out on a gurney too, her eyes closed. That same green mist surrounds her. I just keep shaking my head while Moreau chuckles in delight.
Tell her everything, child. Let her see how thoroughly she has failed, just like her fool brother.
And he does. Dylan tells me that he and Moreau first bumped into each other over the other net while using tech magic. And 2 years ago, it was Dylan who warned Moreau that Vanquish was coming to arrest him, giving Moreau time to wrap his former apprentice in an illusion so he could escape. Dylan was the one who set up Quentin and Maria's kidnapping. He tells me how every triumph in those tryouts kept me close, while also allowing him to remain inside the Department of Supernatural Investigations long enough to use his tech magic to figure out its wards and security systems from the inside. It was all Dylan. Attacking his sister wasn't enough. He wanted to destroy people's memory of her too. It's just so cruel. My heart breaks into pieces. So those hybrids destroying your house, that bruise you supposedly got, that was just to convince me to come back?
Whatever it took. He shrugs.
You can't be like this, I say. You just can't.
We're at war with the entire supernatural world, Dylan says bitterly. We're fighting for magicians' right to exist, Amari. We have to do what's necessary. You should want to be a part of this. A toast.
Moreau interrupts, lifting a glass.
To Amari Peters. The most powerful illusionist I've sensed since Vladimir himself. A shame that you must be sacrificed for the return of the Night Brothers.
Wait, says Dylan. You said that she didn't have to die, that she could join us.
Moreau frowns. Don't be stupid, boy. The girl clearly has no interest in our cause. I gave you the chance to win her over. And you failed. But not to worry.
Moreau pauses to drink from his goblet, letting the blood drip down his chin.
She will go to her death, knowing that it was her sacrifice that righted the world. All those who have cursed and vilified what we are, they shall get their just due. They will all be punished.
I flinch. I've had those same thoughts, wanting revenge on all those people who've hated me for something I can't change about myself. Those people who gave me dirty looks, or the parents who signed that finale petition on the training room door. Isn't it exactly how I felt when I'd finally had enough and shoved Emily Grant on the last day of school? It was payback for all those times she made me feel bad about being the poor black kid from the other side of town. For daring to say that Quentin was dead. And it did feel so good standing over her while all those other kids laughed. I felt totally justified. But that's not how I feel anymore. We can change people's minds about magicians without hurting anyone. I've seen it happen. We just have to give them a chance to see who we really are. Didn't Elsie become my friend because we gave each other a chance? And what about Ranger Alfred at the second tryout? Or those people who clapped for me at the finale? I was changing minds by simply not shutting myself off. No matter how many times my efforts got thrown back in my face.
A touching sentiment. But I have no interest in changing minds, says Moreau. A lion does not concern itself with the opinions of sheep. The supernatural world shall fall in line, or it shall die. Sadly, A great many will have to perish before this message is fully understood.
Without looking down, I slowly reach into my pocket for my phone. If I can send Agent Fiona a message. But when I glance at the screen, Moreau's image appears, wagging a finger at me. The phone shorts out. Moreau stands and pulls the black book from his robe. With another flutter of his fingers, it opens. He sets the book down in front of him. Then he balls both hands into tight fists and slams them together. He hisses the words, "Death's door." The green mist around Quentin and Maria swirls in the air before colliding into the far wall. It reforms into a shimmering green door, as ghostly as the tents at the All Souls Festival. With a swish of his cloak, Moreau glides over to the door. He gives it a single knock and shouts, "Come forth, my old friend. Come forth, Vladimir." The shimmering door begins to creak open. Moreau's gleeful eyes return to me. "You shall supply the magical blood he'll require to nourish himself back to a proper magician." With a wave of his hand, Moreau lifts me out of my chair and drops me in front of the glowing door. A ghostly skeletal arm reaches out from behind it, scratching and clawing to reach me. Moreau's magic is so strong that I can't move an inch. I can't even move to perform an illusion. I'm helpless. "No, no, no." A blast of energy streaks through the air, hitting Moreau square in the back. The old man's arms snap to his sides, and he collapses. Dylan stands over him, pointing his stun stick. Moreau hisses up at him. "You would challenge me now, when we are on the brink of victory?" Dylan closes his eyes. "You know what we are to each other. I can't just watch her die." "Weakness," Moreau snarls. "To put sentiment before power. You are unworthy of being called a magician." Dylan growls back. "You've had centuries to restore magicians to their rightful place. And yet I'm the one who got you the black key. And I'm the one who took the black book. No, I think you're the one who's unworthy. Time's up, old man."
"You do not have the power to steal my magic, boy," Moreau shouts.
Dylan says a series of strange words, and his hands erupt into silver flames. He balls them into fists, and streaks of silver light pour out of Moreau and into Dylan.
"Impossible," Moreau wails.
I scramble to my feet as Moreau does his best to crawl away from Dylan. The guy fades into dust right in front of me. The black book slams shut, and the skeletal figure is yanked back through the ghostly green door before it dissolves into mist. Dylan glows with silver light.
"I wouldn't have believed I could do it until you told me about Director Horace's vision. A non-magician wouldn't know this, but two-headed snakes represent magicians who have stolen magic from another magician, twice as dangerous."
"Please," I beg, "let me have my brother and Maria. Let us go."
Dylan just shakes his head slowly. "Forget about them. They'll only get in the way."
He meets my eyes.
"This is about us, Amari. We're the born magicians of this age. I realize now that this is our time, not the Knight Brothers."
You're a born magician too?"
I ask. "I know I've told you so many lies, and you have no reason to trust me. But we share a bond that's more powerful than anything else in the world. Why do you think I was strong enough to steal Moreau's magic? Our magic calls to each other."
I think back to when I created that Amari blossom without even really trying. Or when I made my illusion throw that spaghetti at Lara. And the fire illusion at the table during the welcome social. Even my very first illusion at the crystal ball. Dylan was in the front row. Every time my magic has overflowed into illusions, he's been right there.
Help me do what the Knight brothers couldn't.